changing pages, so I've asked Jimmy and Mark to keep me in line, so you know I get lost. But we're at a vision for you, and we're on pages 153. And as we pointed out last week, they talk about the substitute for life with alcohol, 153, is the fellowship of the Spirit, right? We pointed that out. It's not the fellowship, it's the fellowship of the Spirit. And these were, the people who started AA were all believers. They were not just believing in a religious, certain religion, but they believed in the power of God because they had worked the steps. So the fellowship was different in 1939, 1940. These are people who had done the deal, and they were living the program. And so they talked about that. And now they're getting to the point where they're going to tell us how the fellowship grew. And I thought before we'd do that, we'd look at the book, because the book doesn't really talk about the fellowship very much, right? But they do tell us how we got this solution, the hand of God, and it's very powerful. So I'm going to take you through a few things. I'm going to give you an overview first, and then we'll look at the specifics. There was a man in England in 1908 who was having a full of resentment. He had lost his job. He was a minister. He went from Philadelphia to England, and he was sitting in a church service. And as he was in the service, he was realizing, as the lady was talking about resentment, that was the sermon. And he said, as he looked at the cross, it became an eye. So he had a spiritual moment. God did something to this man. And he realized that he was the cause of all of his problems, his resentment and his self-centeredness. And he started this group called the Oxford Group. They were called the Oxford Group, not because they started in Oxford, England, but it's a, they were in South Africa a few years later, and they called them the guys from Oxford. But anyway, they started this group. It was called the Oxford Group, and they were Protestant Christians who wanted to practice Christianity and the principles of Christianity as it was laid out in the first century. And they wanted to practice absolute purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. And they had six steps. And they started getting groups formed all around the country and in England. And they, in 1924, he went to China. And he saw a minister there named his name was Reverend Shoemaker, Sam Shoemaker. And he was young, and he was having trouble getting people to believe and working and following, becoming disciples. He was having a lot of issues. And Frank Buckman talked with him and talked about these steps and connecting back to God. And he had a profound influence on Reverend Shoemaker, who went back to New York and started the Calvary Church in Manhattan. And in 1932, on page 26, it says, and this is in the book, I want to see how it ties together and it brings us back, and these events all came together so that we're alive today. It says, a certain American businessman, his name was Roland Hazard, so if you're taking notes, you can write it in there, had ability, good sense, and high character, at least he thought so. For years he had floundered from one sanitarium to another. Now he was very wealthy. He was from Rhode Island. They were very prominent. They had a lot of money. He had everything that he could at his disposal to get better. He couldn't find anybody in America. He went to Switzerland, the Dr. Young. He finished his treatment with unusual confidence. He spent a whole year there getting therapy from the best, one of the preeminent psychiatrists in the world. And he said his physical and mental condition were unusually good. Above all, he's an alcoholic, so above all, he believed he had acquired such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of his mind and its hidden springs that relapse was unthinkable. Now, we're all laughing, right? Because we understand how preposterous it is for an alcoholic to have such a profound knowledge. And nevertheless, he was drunk in a short time. He lasted about a week after he left Switzerland. So he returned to the doctor. The doctor had had a year of therapy with him. And he said, he asked him point blank why he could not recover. He wished above all things to regain self-control. He seemed quite rational and well-balanced with respect to other problems. He could not control whatever over alcohol. Why was this? He begged the doctor to tell him the whole truth, and he got it. The doctor told him that he was utterly hopeless. 1932, a man named Roland Hazard is told in Switzerland that he's utterly hopeless. He would never regain his position in society. He would have to be placed under lock or key or bodyguard. That was the great physician's opinion. Now remember, this book was written in 1939, published in 39, written 38. And they said, but this man still lives. So it's 1932, he's still alive when the book was published, and he's a free man. So how did he go from utterly hopeless to a free man? He does not need a bodyguard, nor is he confined. He can go anywhere on this earth where other men may go without disaster, provided he remains willing to maintain a certain simple attitude. So Roland Hazard went to the Cavalry Church, where Reverend Shoemaker was, and he went to the Oxford group there. And he went to the meetings, and he was able to stay sober. And so he was someone who's utterly hopeless, who worked the six steps. They had six steps. We've expanded them into 12 steps. And he followed those, and he was able to find a relationship with God that gave him a power not to drink. And then we go back to page 8. So 1932, he goes to Oxford. In 1934, we have a man named Bill W. And actually, page 7, forgive me. And he's in the hospital now at the end of page 7. He's 1934, and he's dying. And it says, my weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain perhaps within a year. So he wasn't somebody who was having a bad day, you understand? This man was dying. He was about 35 or 37 years of age. And Roland Hazard, I think, was 40. It would end, and he would go to asylums. He says they did not need to tell me. I knew and almost woke up the idea. It was a devastating blow to his pride. So now in the next paragraph, it says, no words could tell of the loneliness and despair I found, the bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. 1934, this man named Bill W. is dying. He's completely defeated. All right, you see the picture? And then he says, trembling, I stepped from the hospital, a broken man. Fear sobered me for a bit. Then came the insidious insanity of the first drink on Armistice Day, 1934, November 11th, 1934. Now you go to the next paragraph. It says, near the end of that bleak November, I sat drinking in my kitchen. Now here's where God starts to make his move with these people he's put in place. He says, my musing was interrupted by the telephone. He had mused that he had enough gin to last the day. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. This is a man called Ebbie Thatcher. Ebbie Thatcher was from Albany, New York. His father was the mayor of Albany and was running for governor, and they were thinking about making him vice presidential candidate. Ebbie Thatcher used to vacation in Vermont at this lake when he was a young man, and there was a man named Bill W. whose grandfather owned a boarding house there, and Bill W. used to go play with them, and then eventually they drank together. And there was a man named Roland Hazard, see how it puts together, who went out and he lived on the same lake. His family had a home. So they all knew each other. And so Ebbie came to Bill on that November morning, and it says the door opened and he stood there, fresh skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? Now, Bill had never seen Ebby sober. And he often said if he drank like Ebby did, he'd quit. But here he was. Something was different. And it says on the next paragraph, he looked straight at me and he said, I've got religion. So he says, I was aghast. Page 9, that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspected a little cracked about religion. He had that starry-eyed look. The boy was on fire, but here's Bill W. My gin would last longer than his preaching. So look at this next paragraph. He did no ranting. In a matter-of-fact way, he told how two men had appeared in court persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. Now, Ebby had been in Vermont and had shot up a house, had driven his car into some lady's living room and asked for coffee. And the judge was going to put him in an asylum. That's what they did with alcoholics. We were dangerous. We were dangerous to ourselves and others. And there were two men. One was Roland Hazard, and another guy's name was Seabluegraves. There you go. Thanks, Jimmy. Seabluegraves. And Seabluegraves' father was the judge. See the picture here? And so they went up to the judge and they said, give us Ebby. He said, I'll do anything. Just don't bring him back into the state. Take him out of the state. So where'd they take Ebby? To the Calvary Church, where Reverend Shoemaker was, who had gotten into the Oxford group from Frank Buckman and had a program. And Ebby went there and he worked the steps and he was able to stay sober. And he was 60 days sober. And the last step was witnessing. You had to witness and tell your testimony to someone of how your life had changed. And he said, I'm going to go to Bill W. because I know he needs help. And Bill did, right? And it says, two men appeared in court persuading the judge. They had told him of a simple religious idea, the Oxford group. And the Oxford group had a program of action. Now, Roland had gone, and I didn't read all of that. When he went to Dr. Young, Dr. Young told him he was hopeless because he had the mind of a chronic alcoholic, remember? He said, there's no hope for you. But he'd seen phenomenon where throughout history, people had had rearrangements of their personalities. He couldn't explain, and they were able to stay sober. So Roland says, well, I believe in God, I go to church. He says, that's what I'm talking about. And when he went to the Calvary Church, he took the Oxford group steps, and he was able to change. So here we have Ebby and Bill's kitchen, and it says that was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident, it worked. So we have Roland Hazard, we have Bill W. and Ebby, they meet now. We talked about Frank Buckman and Reverend Shoemaker, right? And it said, it had come to pass his experience along to me if I cared to have it. So he came to talk to him, right? And now on page 13, Bill W. in December of 1934 has met with Ebby, and on this page he works the steps. It says he humbly offered himself to God, the third step, to do with me as I would. He placed himself unreservedly under his care and direction. He admitted for the first time that myself, I was nothing, that without him, I was lost. Now, this is a man who was dying on page 8, right? And dying in 1934. And he was helped by a man named Ebby Thatcher, who had been a hopeless alcoholic. And he said he faced his sins. He became willing to have his new friend take them away. So that's a step 4 and 5 and 6 and 7. He visited with, Ebby visited him, and he talked about his problems and deficiencies. He made a list of people I'd hurt or toward whom I felt resentment. Sound like the steps? I expressed my entire willingness. Now remember, there was no AA and there's no big book.
That's a capital F on friend.
Yes. His newfound friend. And he said, I was to write all such matters to the utmost of my ability. And then he talks in the next paragraph about his new consciousness. And then it says, my friend promised, Ebby promised, when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. that I have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Sound good? He says, belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential requirements. Simple but not easy, a price had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. Did we talk about that a lot? We had to fire ourselves, right? We couldn't run the show anymore. And he must turn in all things to the Father of Light, capital F, capital L, Father of Light, who presides over us all, and that comes from Scripture. So here's Bill W. It's 1934, he was dying. Abby Thatcher comes to him and tells him about this Oxford Group's program of how to find a relationship with God. Abby's sober, and he goes to Bill. Now, at this point, here's what happens to Bill. He fully accepted all of these proposals, and then he felt an electric feeling. He had a sense of peace and serenity. He felt lifted up as though a great wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. Something happened to Bill in the hospital when he took the steps. He gave himself to God. Now, Sandy Beach calls this the Big Bang of AA, because something happened to this man that changed him from page 8, right? And these people had come together, Frank Buckman, Shoemaker, Dr. Young. There was also Dr. Silkworth, I didn't mention. He was the doctor in the hospital that told Bill what his problem was. See, Bill never knew what his problem was. He thought his problem was he's just a jerk. But his problem was that he couldn't stop drinking because he had an allergy of the body. And he had an obsession in the mind that couldn't keep him from, he had no power not to drink. But he had no solution when he knew that. And he had no program. So he knew the problem, but he had no solution. Now, Roland Hazard had the problem, and he got the solution from Dr. Young, this spiritual awakening, this spiritual change. And then he went to the Oxford Group, and then Abby Thatcher brought the program of recovery to Bill in the hospital. So Bill W. had all three things. He knew the problem, he knew the solution, and he had a program of action. And then he gave himself to God and something happened. Something changed. And this is where we started to get the ability to salvation from our alcoholism, right at this moment. Because here's what happens to this man. He says, I was alarmed. He called the doctor. He said, am I still sane? He listened in wonder as he talked, and I wrote, this is where God came to Bill. And the doctor said, something has happened to you, I don't understand, but you had better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were. So here's the thing, he's a selfish man, he's made a mess of his life, he's dying on page 8, it's 1934, right? He is one willing, he had a lot of problems with the idea of God. He argues with Abby about whether there's a God or not. He finally decides to try the steps, and he takes these actions in the hospital, and he prays to God, and he has this religious experience, right? And then look what happened to him. He lays in the hospital, and what happens to him? Here's what he does. He thinks about the thousands of hopeless alcoholics. You see what happened to this man? He was dying, and he's changed, and from his self-centered way, he's thinking about all the people he can help. Does this make, it's pretty, to me, it really is really powerful. And they were hopeless, and perhaps I could help some of them. He wanted to give what had been so freely given to me, and then they might work with others. So he had this vision of how he would help an alcoholic, and then another alcoholic would help another, and they would tell him about this program of action. They'd have this religious experience. He says, my friend Abby had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs, back on page 14. Particularly was it imperative to work with others, and he would work with me. We talk about that all the time, right? Faith without works was dead. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. And here's how they talk about faith without works is dead. If the alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life, through work and self-sacrifice for others, he cannot survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. If he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. So Bill W. went into that hospital, a broken man. He took the steps. He had some experience that God gave him, the sudden change. And then he's thinking about all these people he can help. Does it sound like Paul on the Damascus Road? See, that's what Joe and Charlie, something happened to Paul. I've been studying Romans. I've been studying the scriptures. And when you read Acts and Paul's stoning Stephen, right? And then he goes to Damascus to kill all the people in the church. And then he stops and he becomes the greatest teacher to the Gentile world. Something happened to Paul. Something happened to Bill W. Because here's what happened. He said, my wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics. So he gets out of the hospital and he and his wife, it was fortunate because he had no work for a year and a half. He was plagued with waves of self-pity and resentment. He's an alcoholic, right? This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Many times I've gone to my old hospital in despair. And talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It's a design for living that works in rough going. Now, Bill's December 1934. What we're describing takes us to May of 1935. He's worked with all these people. He didn't get anybody sober, but his wife said to him, you're sober. So he was able to stay sober by working with these other alcoholics. And we get to page 153, and now we pick up where Bill is in Akron. So you see what happened to get this man where he was? And this is a man that was hopelessly dying. Something happened to him. And he did go to the Oxford Group. After December, he went to the Oxford Group meetings, and he tried to work with others, and Dr. Silkworth told him that he used to preach to them about this experience he had. And he said, Bill, nobody wants to hear about it. They're alcoholics. Tell them about your drinking. Tell them about your defeat. Tell them what happened to you. And then tell them about how you changed. So then it's 1935 in May, and it's one of our number made a journey to a certain western city. This is Bill W. From a business trip standpoint, his trip came off badly. Bill was going to go, and he was a bright man. He was on Wall Street. He made a lot of money. He lost a lot of money. He was broke at this time. But he had this. He was going to put a group together to start a business with the Firestone people. It fell through. So had he been successful in his enterprise, he would have been set on his feet financially, which at the time seemed vitally important. So what was happening to Bill W. is he was getting back in the self and what he wanted and what he thought he needed. And he thought he really needed to put this business together. And if he'd gotten this business group together, we don't know what would have happened to Bill. We don't know if he would have stayed sober and worked the steps. He was starting to drift away. But his venture wound up in a lawsuit and bogged down completely. The proceeding was shot through with much hard feeling and controversy. Bitterly discouraged. Does that sound good for an alcoholic? Bitterly discouraged. He's alone in May in the Mayflower Hotel. He has no money. He doesn't know how he's going to pay for the bill. Still physically weak and sober, but a few months, he's discredited and broke. He saw that his predicament was dangerous. He understood he was in a dangerous situation.
What page are you on again?
154. He wanted so much to talk with someone, but whom? So here he is. He's in tough shape. He's gone 6 months sober. Something's kept him sober this whole time, this experience he had with God, working with other alcoholics. But now he's in the Mayflower lobby. His business deal went kaput. And he's in a bad place. Any alcoholics in this room recognize this? He's a very dangerous place. One dismal afternoon, he paced the hotel lobby wondering how his bill was to be paid. At one end of the room stood a glass-covered directory of local churches. Down the lobby, a door opened into an attractive bar. It says we see you at the turning point, right? Do you remember that, how it works? Which way was Bill going to turn? My life was in the balance. Our lives are in the balance now. And he wasn't a saint, he was just like us. And he, down the lobby, a door opened on the attractive bar. He could see the gay crowd inside. And there he would find companionship and release. Now, didn't we see how alcohol releases us from boredom, worry, and care, right? Companionship and release. So you think he's thinking about drinking, maybe. Well, guess what he says? Unless he took some drinks, he might not have the courage to scrape an acquaintance and would have a lonely weekend. Bill is thinking about drinking. Of course he couldn't drink, but why not sit hopefully at the table, a bottle of ginger ale before him? Now, you see, this is like the guy went to sell a car, right, in the county. And at the bar, he thought milk and whiskey might make sense, right? Bill's getting ready for some milk. And so he says, I've been sober 6 months now. Have you heard that? I've been sober 3 months. I've been in AA. I can quit any time again, right? You've heard that before, haven't you? You may have done it yourself. Perhaps he could handle, say, 3 drinks, no more. You see, he's already thinking about how many drinks he's going to have. Now, he didn't say 1 drink, you notice. He's an alcoholic. Fear gripped him. Something was working in Bill's life. There was a power in Bill at this point. He's on thin ice. Again, it was the old insidious insanity, that first drink. Now, look at what they write, with a shiver. Something happened. There was something that grabbed him, and it was God. And God said to him, Bill, you don't want to go in that bar. Because Bill had no power on his own not to drink, right? You saw on page 8, alcohol was his master. Something had happened to him. And with a shiver, he turned away and walked down the lobby to the church directory. Music and gay chatter still floated to him from the bar. But what about his responsibilities, his family, and the men who would die because they would not know how to get well? See, God's changing the way he's seeing things. Remember it says on page 84, we turn our thoughts resolutely to those we can help whenever we're in selfishness, resentment, or fear. And he said, there must be many in this town. He would phone a clergyman. His sanity returned, and he thanked God. I think it's one of the most powerful lines in the big book. Bill W.'s sanity returned, and he thanked God. He didn't have the power within him. Now, if you're new today, what I'm trying to portray is that we had 3 hopeless people who came together, and their forces combined for to bring Bill W. to this point where God sent him down the hallway to meet Dr. Bob. And so he selected a church. Now, apparently, he called all of the ministers, and the last one he got was Reverend Thunk. That's his name. And Reverend Thunk said, I think I know somebody who has somebody you could help. And he knew a woman named Ann Cyberling, who was the daughter-in-law of Henry Firestone. Or, I don't know, she was in the family, but I think she was in the guest house, which was 25 rooms. And she had gone to the Oxford group. Get the picture. And she went with Ann Smith and a guy named Dr. Bob Smith, and they went to the Oxford group. And the Oxford group actually came to Akron because Firestone's son was an alcoholic, and he went to the Oxford group in New York, and the dad was so impressed, he brought the Oxford group to Akron. Now, Dr. Bob, 3 weeks before this, had finally told everybody that he was an alcoholic. He couldn't quit drinking. He didn't know what to do. Now, they all knew that. But Bob told him that, and they all prayed for him. And Henrietta prayed that she hoped somebody would come that would help Dr. Bob. So she's the one that got the call, you see. And so she told him that she knew somebody. And she knew Dr. Bob. Now, she called Ann Smith. Now, Dr. Bob, on that Saturday, had passed out in the living room with a potted plant. He went to buy her a potted plant for Mother's Day. And she told Ann that he's potted and he's with the potted plant. So Ann Cyberling, and actually you didn't know this, but I've, before, but she actually had Bill W. to the house, and she had dinner with him, and she asked him if he could stay sober and meet with Dr. Bob the next day. And he said he called to the clergyman, led him presently to a certain resident of the town, page 155, who they formerly able and respected was then nearing the nadir of alcoholic despair. And so this is the situation. I'm going to pick it up with this next week, where he meets Dr. Bob. And Dr. Bob could not stay sober. He was 45, I think, or maybe 50, when years of age. And so this is how these events came, of these hopeless people who came together. And then they're considered the founders of AA. And they wrote this book telling their testimony of what they did so you could follow this, so you could recover. I don't know about you, but it makes me kind of emotional. It's very powerful. So when people come to AA today, they see the meetings and all, they don't understand how this came, how spiritual this program was, and how the hand of God is in it. Joe and Charlie said that God decided he didn't want us to die anymore. And they also said, and I don't know it's true, God didn't talk to me yet about it, but it makes sense that God wanted to give a new message to the world, the 12 steps, so that people could follow the 12 steps and connect with him and use the scriptures, practice what the scriptures preached, an additional information so they could connect in the world of the spirit with him. And so he picked Bill. Bill was a flawed person, picked Dr. Bob. And Joe and Charlie says he's picking people today, and so we can still help another alcoholic. We have that power. So I don't know, I hope it wasn't too confusing, but I saw the way the book has it all tied together, but they didn't put it together. So I'll pass and open it up, and I hope it was helpful.